Can you hear me without the microphone? Okay.
I apologize for the delay. I'm actually thinking about my lessons because I'm short, but I have an outline that I prepared for the speech because I've been in the speech before, but we broke our computer, so I didn't have, which is why I was quickly trying to write it down now. I just want to give a special hello to Connie, where are you? I don't know if I've ever given this speech without Connie. Between SKA, Tiferet, and Mefella, she's always been here, and I can't give it without her, so thank you. Okay, I'd like to talk to you about my son, Shaw, who's autistic. Before I do, I just want to make sure you all know what that means, because one time someone came up to me afterwards and said, what does autistic mean? So raise your hand if you know, if you have experience working with autistic people. Okay, so probably almost everyone does it. Just to tell you quickly, autism is a syndrome where it has different ways that it can manifest itself. It could be very extreme, where the person is completely withdrawn into himself, no eye contact, just shaking and banging and humming and things like that. Or on the other end of the spectrum, someone can have Asperger's, which is very high-functioning autism. They're extremely rational, they're sometimes very, very literal, but they can have friends, they can get married, they can have relationships. So my son Shmuel is somewhere in the middle. And the story starts when a different kid of mine came over to me and said, Ima, I know you love Shmuel, but would you really rather that he weren't autistic if you had a choice? So you would think that I would say, oh, of course I'd rather he wasn't autistic. But I wanted to think about my answer carefully. So I thought about it, and I thought, and I thought, and I'm going to share with you tonight what my thoughts were after he asked me that question. So the first thing was that when I was younger, when I was in high school, like I'm sure a lot of you do, I did do that in school. And a lot of my friends worked with kids with special needs, and I was never comfortable around them. And it always bothered me that I wasn't comfortable around them, but that's just the way I was. I did other things. And in fact, I had a good friend in college, and she, like all my other friends, she worked in CAMPAS. Anyone here worked in CAS or is going to work? Okay. So she was trying to convince me that I should work there. She kept saying to me, come, you're going to love it. And to show me how much I would love it, she told me the following story. She said that when she first went to HASS, for the first time, she requested the little children. And instead, they gave her the middle-aged women, which is a very big difference. And the first 2 weeks of camp, she was so grossed out by them at meals, specifically, that she lost a lot of weight. She couldn't even eat. And by the end of the summer, she said she was eating off their plates. And to show me how much she loved it and how much I would love it, she told me that one time, she was helping one of her campers, and the camper threw up all over her. And suddenly, she got an announcement. My friend had to come to the front gate because her parents were there. And the rule is, a lot of you know, HASS, is if you have a visitor, they're not allowed to come in unless it's visiting day. So she had to go to the gate. And she had no time to change. So she ran to the gate, and she had to throw up all over her. And her mother, who's a very perceptive woman, looked at her and said, I've never seen you look so happy in your life, so fulfilled. And it was true. And my friend was telling me, you see? And I'm like, I'm going to get throw up all over my face? That's the only thing I'm going to like it there? It didn't work for me. And then Hashem gave me Shmuel. And what ended up happening is that I grew a lot from it. The word nisayon, which means test, comes from the word nis, which means a high, a high goal. And that's the purpose of the text. Hashem gives us things in order to make us grow. And having Shmuel in my life made me comfortable around people with special needs. And that's something, as I said, that always bothered me. So that's the first thing that I realized was one advantage of having Shmuel in the house. Now, another thing about Shmuel is that because of him, I got to feel Hashem in my life much more. I want to tell you what happened, a few stories that happened before we moved to Israel. So autistic kids can get very, very rigid. They like things very specific way. And if it doesn't go that way, then it's really, really hard for them. It's hard for a lot of children, but for autistic people, they go crazy, they can't stand it. So what happened was, we were planning to make Aliyah 8 years ago with the Indians. And I had been packing for weeks, and every time I unpacked the suitcase, she would unpack it. That's just what he did. And 15 minutes before we were ready to go to the airport, my husband and I looked at each other around the room and said, we can't go, we're not ready to go. Like, I had been packing for weeks, and no matter what I did, he undid everything I did. So we called up Memphis and explained the situation to them because they were paying for our tickets. And they said, okay, one of you go, and one of you stay home and spend a few days or a day fixing it up and finishing up, and then you'll make up. So we decided that I would go with my 4 children on the plane alone, and my husband would come the next day. Okay. So we got to the airport, now everything's fine, no problem. And then we get to the spot where people can't go in anymore unless they're flying. And all of a sudden, Shmuel realized that Abba wasn't coming on the plane. And he went crazy. He went absolutely crazy. And he started having a full-blown tantrum in the middle there of the airport. And he ran away. He ran out of, and he ran, you know, JFK Airport is very big, and he ran away. Ran it over. My husband's chasing him. He's screaming. You could hear him throughout the whole airport. Finally brings him back. I take him away. He was a little boy. He was like 6 or 7. But he can be very strong when, you know, he doesn't get what he wants. So we were walking, you know, finally we got to the place where they checked him. Now two guards were standing there, and Shmuel threw himself down on that thing that you're supposed to pass through where they scan you. And he wouldn't move. And he was holding up the whole line. And they're like, lady, pick him up! And I said, you pick him up! You know, they were the ones that I didn't really say that in my head. I just said, I'm trying, okay? And he wasn't moving. Finally, I didn't know what I was going to do. I really didn't know what I was going to do. I finally got him up, and I was dragging him. And my other kids were taking care of themselves. I was dragging him. And suddenly I saw a miracle. It was called movable floors. You know what those are? Okay? And I threw him on it, and I finally was able to let go, and it moved him. And as soon as it was done, I threw him on the next one. I think there were 3. And then we were a few feet away from the airplane. I threw him on the airplane. We got inside. I buckled him. I was so tired. I had been up the whole night packing, and I was looking forward to sleeping on the plane. I buckled him in, and then I did the stupidest thing in my life. He said, Ima, need to go to the bathroom. And what I should have done, I said, too bad, you know. He was wearing a diaper. He was 7, but he wasn't trained yet. I should have just let go with this diaper, but I was stupid. Oh, working on toilet training. He wants to go to the bathroom. Unbuckled him. Guess what? He didn't even go to the bathroom, okay? And he didn't sit down the whole flight. And it was a night flight, which means it was nighttime, it was bedtime. He was supposed to be sleeping. And everyone on the plane finally got their kids quiet and their babies quiet. And it's really hard to fly with babies. And everyone's so excited when they're sleeping. Shmuel was going up and down the plane, up and down, into first class, high-fiving everyone in first class. They were fine with it. And there was just a curtain separating us from first class. And someone on the plane came over to me and said, I'm sorry, little man, we can't let you in there. And I didn't know what to do because it was a curtain. It wasn't like a door. I stood by the curtain and I wouldn't let him pass. He had a tantrum. He woke up all the babies on the plane. He woke up every little kid. And he woke up a cat, okay? There was a cat there. And the parents weren't like, they felt bad for me. But it's very frustrating when your baby's finally sleeping. And he was kicking and screaming, and I was exhausted. I didn't know what to do with myself. So I dragged him away. I didn't know where to put him. And on the way, I passed this lever. I'm sure you've seen it on the plane that says, don't touch, leave closed, right? So I said to the flight attendant, it's nothing terrible is going to happen. Because I had this vision of him just like opening it, you know? She said, get him away from there. I was thinking, wonderful, my son's going to kill everyone on this plane. I mean, really, that's really dangerous. Any kid can do that. And then we kept walking, and I didn't know what to do. And finally, I found a spot on the plane. It was like shaped like that. I don't know what it was. It was like a kitchen, but no one was using it. And I threw him in there, and I stood blocking him so he couldn't leave. keep him, I'm going to block him. And I'm standing there feeling relief, finally, and then somebody says, you can't keep him there, lady, it's dangerous. And at that point, I lost it. I didn't have anyone to help me, I was exhausted, and I just started to cry. I just like sat on the floor and started to cry. After a few minutes, I felt someone standing there, but I didn't want to look up, because I knew my whole face was covered with mascara. So I just kept looking down, and was like, excuse me, is there someone to sit on? And so they said, well, I volunteer with autistic kids in Israel. I can help you with him. And then another was a flight attendant. There were five flight attendants on the plane. Then another one came and said, oh, I volunteer with autistic kids. I help them horseback riding. And then a woman came and she said, oh, I used to work in a home for autistic kids. I'll help you, okay? Three out of my five flight attendants had experience working with autistic kids. And the rest of the flight, which was, this was already a nice time, 2 or 3 hours into it, the rest of the flight, they helped me. And, you know, that chair that only they're allowed to sit on, they let him sit on it, so he had his special chair. I felt hashgacha. Hashgacha means, like, God's watching over me. I felt it like I never felt it in my entire life. And I have to tell you that, as exhausted as I was, it was the best feeling in the world, because God really can do anything. So to know that he's looking out for me, I mean, some people can say it's a coincidence, but what's the chances that 3 out of my 5 flight attendants are going to have experience working on logistics? Anyway, the rest of the flight, I did everything I could to get him to fall asleep. I gave him everything. I gave him Benadryl. I gave him these holistic drops that somebody told me on the plane would help. I tried everything. He was up the whole night. 10 minutes before we landed, he fell asleep. And therefore, by the way, I got an adopted cousin before the trip. One of the Nefesh social workers was there helping. So if you see our pictures getting off the plane, there's me with my 3 kids and my adopted cousin, the whole Shmuel, who's finally sleeping. And Flella greeting us, by the way, which was really nice. Okay, so I felt God in my life in this very strong way. And of course, if God's in my life because of Shmuel, he's in my life for everything. So having Shmuel gave me that very, very special feeling. And I saw it a few times in a very, very powerful way. When we finally made Aliyah, when we got off the plane, we took a cab to Ramat Beit Shemesh, we landed here, and within 2 minutes, Shmuel was lost. We couldn't find him anywhere. We ended up finding him in the middle of this very busy intersection. There were 4 different ways that a car can hit Shmuel. He was standing right in the middle. And all the traffic was at a standstill, and all the Israeli cab drivers were yelling, you know? He didn't even know what they were saying. It was like, he goes, and they were all screaming at him. Well, we found him, thank God. We got into my parents' house to live here. We locked the door, we hid the key. Nobody can get out, nobody cares, only Shmuel was in the room. And that was the beginning. And then I found out about a certain kind of therapy called craniosacral therapy, which is supposed to help autistic kids. So I went to meet with the lady, and I asked her how many times does he have to meet and everything. She told me, I said, I'll tell you the truth, I don't think this is going to work, because if you're telling me to come at a very specific time, which I totally understand, I can't guarantee we're going to get there. He can get really stubborn, and if I make an appointment with you once a week, and it's far away from my house, then there's a very good chance we're not going to get there, so I don't want to waste my money and your time. So she said, well, I'm moving offices next week. Maybe it'll be closer to you. I said, where are you moving? She said, Lachish. I said, oh, I live on Lachish. What number? She said, 9. I said, I live at 9. So basically, I had to walk down 1 flight of stairs to my appointment every single week. And once again, I just thought, what are the chances of this therapy being in the exact building that I needed to be? And it was just a really, again, this very, very strong feeling. So 2 things already. Number one, Shmuel really helped me work with kids, understand kids with special needs, raised me up. And also because of him, I felt Hashem in my life in a very strong way. Now the third thing about Shmuel is that he's extremely spiritual. They say that kids with special needs have a very, very high neshama. And even though Shmuel can be extremely difficult, the fact that he has a very high neshama is very evident. He listens to shiurim all day long when he's home, all day. And I don't know why. I mean, it's just men talking, or women talking, and he knows, I don't think he can understand what they're saying, but he listens to to them. And sometimes, you know, I'll say, want to listen to Rabbi Schechter? And then you can't find it because somehow he knows on the computer where to find everything, but I don't know. So I put on a different one. Another example I want to tell you is when we first moved to Israel, so we were supposed to be renting the apartment for 1 year. We had a million boxes of us, so we only unpacked what we really needed. There was one box that sort of exploded. It was full of papers. So I put it in a lot of drawers in the kitchen, and I put all the papers in the box, and everyone looked at them in one of the big drawers in the kitchen. Pesach time came, and I was cleaning the drawer, and I was putting the papers down, and this one paper was on the top of the pile. Every time someone walked by, it sort of flew up and landed in my lap. It's happened about 10 times. I'm like, oh, let me need this paper. I'm like, what is it? So I read it, and it said, good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today, and I don't need your help. Have a good day. I love you. Did anyone ever hear that? Okay, raise your hand if you heard. I never heard it before. I had no idea where I got that paper from. I didn't even know if it was Jewish. I didn't know what that was. I realized later that one of the teachers before I left SKA as a president had photocopied for me, She had a whole booklet of inspiring quotes and articles that she had photocopied it for me, and I hadn't gone through the whole thing yet. So that's where it was from. I didn't know where it was from. And I kind of almost started to cry when I read that because I felt that I was getting a message from God because it wasn't so easy and in a lot of ways. And it was like, okay, that's a nice message from God. One of my kids came into the room and she saw the paper, she saw me holding it, and she picked it up and she started to read out loud a few times. And she read it in a very funny voice. She went, don't worry, this is God. I'll take care of all your problems like that. And what happened was it sort of ruined the message for me. There's a saying that, you know, you can have like 100 words of, you know, serious talk, and then if somebody makes a little joke, it can take all those words away. And that's what happened. I got this beautiful message from God, but the person was saying, you know, your kind voice sort of made fun of it, and I sort of lost that feeling that I had. Okay, well, the next day, I went to knock on my neighbor's door. My neighbors are restless, and I knocked on their door like every day. And I said, so that was not. Magnet on their door that I never saw before. And it was never there before. I know, because I knocked on their door every day. And it said, good morning, this is God. I'll take care of all your problems today. I don't need your help. Have a good day. I love you. And I was really kind of freaked out. And I knocked on the door and I said, what's that? Where did you get that magnet from? She said, oh, that's like a modular vessel. That's what he says. I said, but it was never on your door before. I know, it's weird. You should keep it inside the door. I don't know. My son's supposed to put it outside today for some reason. I don't know. And I felt like, oh my goodness, like Hashem really wanted me to get that message that he was there for me. And since one of my kids ruined it for me, he made sure I got it in a different way. And then a few days later, I was having a really hard day with Shmuel. And he turns to me and he goes, good morning, this is God. I'll be taking care of all your problems today. I need your help. Have a good day. I love you. I was like, what? And I realized what happened. Shmuel has an unbelievable memory. He remembers everything he hears. He knows every take by heart. So he must have heard my kid saying that over and over again. And it just stuck in his head. But it came out from him at a time that I really needed it again. And coming from him, I felt again what I keep saying, that I feel like God is sort of sending me messages of support through him. I felt that very strongly at the time. And that is my third example of how Shmuel is very spiritual, and that's another advantage, so to speak, of having him in the house. Now, the fourth thing is, because of Shmuel, I learned to appreciate a lot of little things that I didn't appreciate before. He's my third kid, and my other kids, thank God, developed normally. And because of that, I didn't pay attention to everything. But Shmuel did. Every single thing that he does today is because me or somebody else specifically taught him how to do that. For example, I never knew this before, but there's something called midline, which is an imaginary line in the middle of your face. Is anyone familiar with that? Okay. I never heard of that. And what happens is that until a certain age, a kid naturally, if there's something on their right side, they'll reach it with their right hand. If there's something on their left side, they'll reach for it with their left hand. And it's a certain age, a certain milestone, that they actually cross the midline, which means they'll reach for something on the other side, like the left side of the right hand. So Shmuel wasn't doing that, because he didn't do anything he was supposed to when he was supposed to. So the therapist had to literally teach him to do that. She had to literally hold his left hand down, put something on the left side, and pick up his right hand and teach him to do that until he did it on his own. So then when my next kid was born, it was Rafa, and one day I saw her crossing midline, like, she's crossing midline! It was just, like, so exciting. And as I said, because of him, I learned to appreciate every little thing that happened. And one very powerful example is, Shmuel wasn't talking for a very long time, but I noticed that he was willing to sing. He's deaf in one ear, but he still has an unbelievable ear for music. He could play piano by ear. So he'd sing anything, but he wouldn't talk. So I made everything in the house into a song so that he would at least say some words. Anyway, whenever I used to change his diaper, he didn't like it because he was getting bigger and bigger, and he didn't like to lie on the bedding table. So I was trying to keep him there. One of my kids came home one day with like a little song that I'm sure you're familiar with that goes, "Hello, it's Joe. You know it? I work in a puppy factory. I have a cat that's all in a family. One day, I must say, Joe, are you busy?" And I said no, right? So he sort of liked it because it was a chant. It was like a song, right? He liked that. So, I sang it to him while I was changing his diaper. But what I'm going to tell you now, you're not going to understand until you're a mother. Mothers sometimes say weird things to their children. It's not logical. They just call them weird names. They say weird things. So I don't know why I did this, okay? Like, for example, last year, I was talking to my little daughter who was like a year and a half. And I'm like, "Come here, my jelly, come to bed," okay? And I was like, "Why are you on her scumbag?" Like, I know. It just came out of me. She didn't smell bad. I don't know, okay? I don't know. It doesn't happen to the brain. So I think I heard somewhere you lose brain cells every time you deliver a baby. That's what I was saying. And I'm twins, so it was a lot, you know? So, anyway, so by the way, anyway, my song to him, I'm trying to change the cipher, and I go, "Hello, my name's Jeff. I work in a family." One day, I posted, "Joe, are you busy?" And I said, "No way." I don't know why I did that, but he loved it. He loved it. And that's how I kept him on the dining table, because until I said, "No way," he wouldn't move. He would just lie there, like, waiting for me to say it. So if I had a really dirty diaper, I would just, like, drag it out, and he would just lie there until I said, "No way." Now, when he was about two or 3 years old, he really wasn't talking. And we took a trip, it was the last trip we actually took together as a family, because it got too hard after that. We stopped at a gas station. We were in Missoura for the summer. Anyone from Missoura? Okay. We were in Missoura for the summer, and we took a trip and we stopped at a gas station, and my husband took the two other kids out, and I was alone in the car with Shmuel. He was getting restless. So I wanted to distract him. So I started to say, "Hello, my name is Joe. I work at a bike factory." And then I got, "Are you busy?" And I said, and I was about to say, "No way." And all of a sudden, something hit me. Shmuel maybe doesn't talk because he doesn't need to. He definitely knows words. I know he knows words because he sings them. So maybe if I make him need to talk, maybe he'll actually talk. So I said, "Are you busy?" And I said, and he was like, "He can't wait." And I said, and he was like, he looked like he was quivering with excitement already, waiting for me to say it, and I won't say it. I said, "And I said," and all of a sudden I hear, "No way." It was the first words he ever said that wasn't in a song. And I just started to cry. I did a lot, you know this. And the family came at the gas station. "He said no way!" And you go, "What?" And then, of course, they tried to duplicate it. Of course, he wouldn't do it again. But, like, he said no way. He was, like, 3, okay? I never would have appreciated if one of my kids did something like that, because everything was so hard for them. It made me appreciate it so much, so when Rachel was born 2 years later, everything she did, I appreciated. And now, I have 23-year-olds, and there's 2 of them, and, like, everything they do is just, they're delayed because they were born early, but everything they do is just unbelievable because I just can't get over it. People are like, "Oh, you have 2 kids, they're late." I'm like, "They're late? They're nothing, okay? Don't worry about them." And compared to Shmuel, they're doing much more than he's doing now. So it's like, you know, it really made me appreciate everything. Now, besides that it made me appreciate everything, it also made my family much more sensitive. So having one of my sons has decided to go into working with kids with special needs, maybe that would have happened otherwise, I don't know. But it sensitized my other siblings to things like like that. Like sometimes people tell me that, you know, kids, people make fun of their kids. Let's say a kid has Down syndrome, so you want to speak in front of them. Like I know one thing, you know, my kids would never do that because they know what it's like growing up with someone special needs and they're sensitive. And just my favorite example is when Rachel was 2 and Shmuel was 4. So she had really tight curls. And he liked to pull people's hair. And I have to tell you, I don't know if anyone's ever pulled your hair, but it hurts so badly. There are times where Shmuel pulled my hair, and I'm not a hitter. I don't have any temptation to hit my kids. But when he's pulling my hair, I just like want to punch him. It hurts so badly. So here was this little 2-year-old, and she had these tight curls, and he had his hands, his fist in her curls, and he was dragging her along like the floor. And she's like, Ema, help me, whatever. So I'm trying to get his hand down, but it's so tight that every time I get one finger out, he catches another curl. The kid turns to him. She was 2 and a half. And she said, Shmuel, he was killing her. And she said, Shmuel, I love you so much. Why are you hurting me? And she didn't do this because I told her to do this. I would never tell a 2-and-a-half-year-old that she has to talk that way while she's in pain. That's just like Hashem gave me, her name's Bracha. Hashem gave me a Bracha. He gave me a Bracha to help me deal with Shmuel. And it's also because she learned to grow. This is her, and she loves him. She adores him, even though he's still not so easy to be around. Okay. And the last, one of the next things I want to tell you about is also Shmuel just has a very cute personality. And I don't know if he's this way because he's autistic or because he's Shmuel, but I'll tell you an example. Shmuel, first of all, is obsessed with the Chafetz Chaim, absolutely obsessed. He goes to a shul, they have like a set of Chafetz Chaim books that has a picture in the back of each book. You know, on binding, there's a picture of the Chafetz Chaim. I don't know if you've ever seen that. The Chafetz Chaim Heritage Foundation. So he loves to go to the shul, and he loves to go, he's obsessed with it. When he was 7, my parents bought him a stuffed animal as a birthday present, and he threw it behind the couch. And I gave him a picture of the Chafetz Chaim, you know, wrapped up. He was 7. And he, like, unwrapped it. It's just like, wow, Chafetz Chaim. And anyone who came to the house was like, Chafetz Chaim, Shmuel's birthday present. He's obsessed with it. And we have three Chafetz Chaim in our house. Like, that's what we have in our house that he did break because he breaks all of the pictures. So the Chafetz Chaim is still in our room. Another thing about him is he loves the Jewish holidays. He can't wait for them. He used to build menorahs out of blocks, and he used to practice singing all the brachos, and he used to practice lighting the menorah with all the blessings. And sukkahs, you know, when you put up a sukkah, we put it up a month in advance, we take it down 2 months in advance, because he's so happy in the sukkah, he loves it so much. But one of his favorites is shofar blowing. One day, I had a terrible, terrible cold, and my throat was hurting so badly. And every time I coughed, my chest felt like it was on fire, and my throat felt like it was burning. And I came into the room, and I gave a big cough, and he said, Shevarim! Now, anyone who's not familiar with that, there are 3 shofar blasts, okay? We have tikiya, which is a long sound. Then we have shevarim, which is 3 medium sounds. And then we have teruah, which is 9 little sounds. Okay? So I was like, oh my goodness. I didn't know what to do. Every cough killed me. I had 2 choices. I could do a shevarim, or can I try to explain to him over and over that my throat hurt and my chest hurt and I don't want to purposely cough. So I chose to do a shevarim. So I went, then he's like, the humor in a lot of the situations is what keeps me going, because I notice that But it still can be very, very hard living with him. And I don't want you to think, like in case, you know, you have a child with special needs or something, that or you have a sibling with special needs now or something, that like, hey, why isn't this all fun? You know, it's taking a big, it sounds like it's so much fun. It's not always fun, okay? It's just that these are the things that sort of keep me going. But for example, something that can be very hard for my family, right before we made Aliyah, while I was trying to pack and Shmuel was unpacking, autistic people like to wind things up. So Shmuel would go to the kitchen and go to the fridge and take every single can, container, bottle, and jar and line them up all the way from the fridge to our porch, which was a very long line. And I'd come home from work or, you know, my kids would walk around and there'd be like a pickle jar and mustard and ketchup and milk and juice. And things would sometimes spill and then the floor would smell like pickle juice. And, you know, he'd have a tantrum, full-blown, if somebody would knock something over. Like, he would be pulling his hair out and binging his head and hitting himself and, like, pinching himself. And it was very difficult for the family. And I was trying to package legs and pieces and had to worry about spilling the mustard. He's going to have a tantrum. Unload my suitcase. It was very difficult. So one of my kids had a brilliant idea. She had this, she knows the program. It was for home decorating, not on the computer. And basically, it had a lot of objects in it. So you could figure out how you wanted your house to look. You could put the couch, and put flowers, and tables, and it had everything to make it look realistic. It had mustard, it had ketchup, it had pickles, it had juice, everything that was in our house. So she taught him to line it up on the computer, and he made a teacher train out of all the pictures on the computer. And we were so relieved, we finally let him knock my floor, and it would smell like mustard. Until he discovered that if you press Control P, it prints. And then he printed all his teacher trains, and then guess what he did? He insisted on lining up all his pictures from the fridge to the porch. And as you can imagine, walking by a choo-choo train made out of papers rustles it. Much worse than it knocks down a pickle jar. And of course, it had a terrible tantrum each time. So it could be very difficult. And now, I wasn't joking about the printer. Like, he's broken everything basically in our house. And he tore my wedding album apart, and he tore down all the pictures from the wall, and he broke like every door in our house. We had people come to our house. You know those heavy metal doors that we have in Israel in the front of the house? We wanted to buy one for our bathroom. Because he broke the bathroom door down so many times that we had a shower curtain as a bathroom door for 3 months. And it was like a little bit weird when we had guests over. So we wanted to get a door. We didn't want him again. He was going to break it. But it's also a little bit, like, why do you want to put a front door on your bathroom? What are you doing in your bathroom? Should I report you? No, but that's our life. So it can be very hard, which is the reason that my son asked me originally, shut out, are you happy you have Shmuel? But then, Sean, where is she? She's not here? Okay, she was there. I see you time. I just forgot what time she told me this time. Anyone know? Okay, I'll keep talking. Okay, and the last thing which I can take, which I'm not going to take, because I know you have other things to do, but the last thing, I usually show the movie after I speak, which I'm not showing now because they had another activity. They said maybe they show it another night. If any of you are interested, it's actually on YouTube, and it's called, I always get the name wrong, yes, The Miracle of Love, okay? It's basically, it's really interesting, and make sure if you go on YouTube that you get the one that's not divided into 10 parts, which is annoying. They just put on your new one that has the whole thing in one shot. It's a beautiful story about a little boy whose name was Ron. He was born healthy, and he became autistic by the end of his first year. And how his mother, working with him for 3 years, how she gradually, completely brought him out of autism, 100%, in a very special and unique way that, depending on how long Sean is something you have, I'll either briefly tell you or not, you could do it yourself. But that boy grew up to become, he's now the CEO of this organization called Sunrise, Autism Treatment Center of America. And I actually went on the program in Massachusetts 2 weeks, and he was one of my teachers there. He's completely not autistic anymore, and he taught me how to help my son. And it's really an amazing story. But again, as soon as I have an answer from Sean, I'll tell you briefly or not. But either way, if any of you are interested in watching it, it's a very unique method of working with people with special needs, like you can see it's here. So. No, tell me.
A
few minutes more? Okay, so I'll tell you just in like 2 minutes what the mother did that was very special. What happened was her son was literally doing nothing. He was rocking, he was flapping, he was humming, and he made no eye contact. He was like that extreme case of autism that I told you about at the beginning. So one day she was looking at him and she was thinking, I want so badly to help you, but I don't know what to do. And sort of she found herself without understanding why, as he was rocking, she was sort of rocking with him, like this. And her husband came down and noticed, and later he said, what were you doing? And she said she realized what she was doing as she was describing to her husband, that she wanted to show him that I'm with you, I love you, I love you the way you are, even though you're not coming out to me. I want to be with you however you are. And basically, again, if you watch the movie on your own time, you'll see how she did it. But basically, she worked with him for 3 years by being with him in the way he was until she stepped into his world and gradually brought him completely out of his world into her own world. And that is something that, again, that beautiful, it's a beautiful message, which may sound a little bit crazy, which is, I love you the way you are, even though I want more from you in the future. Now, this is an example from your own personal lives, which you could apply. Let's say somebody here has, like, skin that she hates. Like, let's say, you know, you have acne all over it. So every time you look in the mirror, you're like, you talk down to yourself. You're fine. And why are you doing that? A lot of times people are doing that because they hope it will help motivate them. So let's say not eat certain foods, which may cause pimples. But what ends up happening a lot of times is that you have to just feel bad about yourself and probably eating those foods anyway. So it's a challenge to take it yourself, which is, can you look in the mirror and say, you know, I like you the way you are, even though I want changes for you in the future. This could apply to anything. This could apply to the way you act in a certain area. You're trying to grow in some area, but you're not quite there yet and you're embarrassed. It's not a contradiction to like yourself or your children or your friends or your spouses or anyone the way they are, even though you want more from them in the future. And this is a very deep thought, really, to think about, and I just threw out in the last second. But it's really the message of the sunrise program. Again, I never would have had this idea if I hadn't met my autistic son. So to sum up, what I said to you, having Shmuel, I thought about having Shmuel, brought me to my potential. It helped me feel the body of my life in a way I hadn't before. I got to appreciate the spirituality. It helped me appreciate little things that the rest of my family did. It helped me, my family, become more sensitive. And it taught me the idea of loving yourself and others, even if they're not exactly the way you want them to be. And my rest of neighbors, who I already mentioned, the first sukkah that we were in Israel, they invited us for a meal. And they told me something, which again, probably a lot of you know, because you knew about that man, and I never heard of, which is the idea, the rest of the idea that all little kids know from the time they're little, which is that when a soul sighs, when a soul is in heaven, and it's going to be born, or succeed, it gets to look at the family and decide which family it wants to go to. And the rest of the mother told me that whenever her kids are acting up, she's joking, she's very funny, she always says, listen, Leia,